In a world filled with war, hate, suffering, and Justin Bieber, two guys fix it all with a battle about a movie. One film, two opinions, one coin, two sides. They feud. You decide. It's time for Film Feud.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Film Feud, the podcast where we debate whether top-rated movies should be top-rated. I'm Vidur.
And I'm Vikram.
What's up, Vikram?
None much, brother. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well. Ready to feud in the 2020s?
Yep. New decade, new feuds. Bring it.
And to kick off the new decade of feuds, we have a very nice cap to the decade that came in the form of Mr. Martin Scorsese's The Irishman. Why don't you tell the good folk, our listeners, what we're going to be doing here today?
So we're going to take this movie, The Irishman. We're going to toss a coin. Heads argues for and tails argues against.
Simple enough. Now, The Irishman is a very storied movie. It came out directly on Netflix, more or less. They released it in theaters so that it would be an Oscar.
Limited release.
For Oscars, yeah, basically, yeah. Or awards or whatever. And Martin Scorsese has been running his mouth a little bit lately.
He has, especially during the run-up to the movie. A lot of hate for Marvel and the MCU.
But it's Martin Scorsese, and you have to pay attention because the man is bringing back Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, and our man, Cousin Vinny, Joe Pesci, to the not-so-big screen, but in a movie together.
It's the big screen, come on.
And De Niro and Scorsese hadn't worked together since Casino?
Since Casino, yep.
Like almost 25
years. He found DiCaprio.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's unbelievable, man.
New muse.
So listen, I'm going to be very honest. I was very excited for this movie.
Okay.
I have now watched it twice already.
Wow, Vidur.
Because, you
two
know,
times?
The holiday season and Scorsese.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of those things where I knew I was going to watch it multiple times, so I just got it over with.
Oh, okay,
like,
okay.
In life, I'm going to watch this movie many times, so I might as well just watch it twice.
Okay, interesting.
Right? What about you?
I have also seen it multiple times.
Laying the cards on them tables.
Why not? Listen.
Hey, what do you think of the movie, Vikram?
It's interesting. It's okay. One thing I can say right now, it's very un-Scorsese-like.
What does that mean?
It's not a typical Scorsese movie. And that's all I'm willing to say.
Okay, Vikram, diplomatic as always. Why don't we just get to the coin toss so we can be a little more outspoken about our feelings?
Please, let's do it.
Let's do it. I will be tossing the coin. Heads means I argue for The Irishman, and tails means I argue against. Let's go. And it's tails.
And you're screwed.
I'm so not screwed.
Dude, shut up. Seriously. Just you talking to me. No one else is listening right now.
Okay. We can pretend that.
You're screwed.
I did not enjoy this movie.
Both times that you rapidly rewatched it?
This should be called The Indulgent Man.
Horse, horse shit. Okay, I'm going to save it, dude. I'm going to save it.
The Tedious Man.
Okay, blow your load. Go for it. Just do it.
I am dreading watching this movie again.
I am looking forward to it. I'm going to savor this movie. I'm going to skip and I'm going to rewind and I'm going to rewatch scenes multiple times. I'm going to savor this movie because I know exactly what I'm going for.
I just cannot wait to have this over with. My third viewing of The Irishman. Why don't we just get to it, man? I just want to get to it.
Yeah, let's go watch right now.
All right, let's go watch the movie. So, Vikram, that was an okay limited TV series made for Netflix.
Shots fired, dude. Shots fired. Come on, Vidur. Seriously.
You know, Scorsese saying Marvel movies are not cinema.
Mm-hmm.
There's never been a better okay boomer moment in the history of cinema. And the irony is, this man did not make cinema. The very next movie he made after running his mouth... It's like a long ass... I mean, I binge TV shows all the time and I found this so tedious to get through. It's just so long. Vikram, I know you're not used to hearing this, but it's just so long.
I think it is a long movie, no doubt. And it was clear that it's a long movie, 3 hours, 20 minutes. But
it doesn't earn its length.
This movie earns its extended runtime. What are you talking about?
Gangs of Wazapur is my favorite movie of all time. It's like 4.5 hours. I don't feel it. Here, you just feel every moment. You know, when you adapt a book like Scorsese has in the past... You're supposed to just like, you know, add some stuff, reduce some stuff, make it into a movie. And like, I mean, listen, a terrible Scorsese movie is still worthy of our attention. Okay.
And also does not exist.
Of course, terrible Scorsese movies exist.
Example?
I don't watch them.
Example?
I haven't seen one.
Example? Give me an example. You're saying you're so sure.
The Last Temptation of Christ. I mean, I don't know.
If you haven't seen it, then how do you know it's terrible?
I heard it's not The Age of Innocence.
I heard it's not... anything with Daniel Day-Lewis cannot be called terrible. I shall punch you.
I don't like Gangs of New York. You just reminded me with Daniel Day-Lewis.
As a terrible movie?
It still deserves attention. A terrible Scorsese movie deserves attention. A terrible movie with Al Pacino and Robert De Niro deserves attention. Which, by the way, Righteous Kill, terrible. Heat, amazing. You know, it's not like we haven't seen this before. This movie takes a shit on Heat by like... making these characters so just not against each other, but also like friendly and so muted. Al Pacino's doing his thing. Robert De Niro, not so much. Ugh, hated it.
Firstly, I think you're being very overindulgent when you say terrible Scorsese movie. It's not, if it's not one of Scorsese's better movies, I agree. It's still a great movie because it's probably better than 90% of the movies out there. Gangs of New York specifically, the set design and Daniel Day-Lewis in that movie is reason enough to just watch it over and over again.
Dude, I'm just Martin Scorsese'd out at this point. The sad thing is this movie is supposed to be like a swan song, you know. I mean, he's not that old, but he might not make a movie like this anymore. He definitely won't make it with these actors. For him to go out on such a whimper, it's just sad. We've been watching his movies for like half a century. He's been making them. I've been watching them for 20, 30 years.
You're losing credibility with every word.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
You know, with Hugo, Scorsese was like making movies that were reverential of cinema. This movie feels like it's reverential of his own movies. He's like, oh, remember that great movie I made? Remember that tracking shot in Goodfellas? Oh, now it's in a nursing home.
Oh, so he used a cinematic shooting technique, which he used in two movies. So
no,
everything
about this movie, at the end of the day, it's a mob movie with Scorsese, right? You have to compare it to Goodfellas and even more so Casino because of the scope of the story it's telling. Those movies had some style, dude, some pizzazz. There were like these morsels of like sliced almonds in the salad that made all the vegetables so much better.
Sliced, you know, almonds.
They keep you like invested in the show. You care about the greens. This movie is oomphless. There's no oomph in this movie.
Everything that you said clearly indicates that you missed completely what this movie was supposed to be.
What did I miss? Hey, you got a fish? No, there's no fish in my car. But where's the fish? But what fish did you get? A halibut? Oh, yeah, be 12 minutes late for a meeting. This is sad. This is like, you know, when actors are asked, oh, was there a lot of improv on this? All the actors should be like, no, because it was horrible and slow and tedious and overindulgent.
That's a blasphemy, firstly. I thought that... or scenes like that, the one that you mentioned was scenes that you actually like Scorsese for, because he does that in all his movies. Surprised that you're going against that. What I really liked about this movie was that, firstly, there was no part of the movie that could have been edited out. There's no part of the movie that could have been edited out, and yet the story remained intact. That's why it was 3 hours, 20 minutes. And look, don't get me wrong, I'm more than happy to sit through anything that Scorsese makes, but the last half an hour of this movie, you actually see what he's been cooking up the entire time. And when it all comes together, it's just like this jolt of emotion that I'm still not being able to shake even after the third viewing.
Bro, I get it. You know, the last 40 minutes, whatever it is, it's like crime doesn't pay, right? All of his crime movies are supposedly glorifications of crime.
Yeah.
But then in the end,
glorification of wise guys.
Or wise guys, or mobsters, you know, the mob.
And it's not just him. All gangster movies, good gangster movies, tend to do that. They glorify bad guys.
I don't know about that. Like, a Gangs of Wazipur is a gangster movie. It doesn't glorify bad guys.
Of course it does.
It glorifies, like, the violence.
The problem is, whenever your point of view character is a gangster, then either you start, it becomes like this endearing factor to that person, or it becomes like this is the bad guy, so he's the antagonist.
Think about Goodfellas and Casino. Like, neither of the protagonists end up in good places. And that split second, one moment, I'm going to have to eat like noodles and ketchup instead of spaghetti and marinara and live the rest of my life like a schnook in Goodfellas. That's it. You know crime doesn't pay. You don't need that like extra half an hour of nursing home. You can imagine the rest. This is like giving us the shit that happened to Han, Luke, and Leia in the sequels and making it part of Return of the Jedi. It's like, oh, they don't really have a great fate, guys. And here, you need to like sit through that and like see what exactly happens. I don't care. I can imagine it. It's okay. He dies alone. I get it.
No. But see, again, you missed it. See, either you're glorifying wise guys, even if it's not a happily or an unhappily ever after life story, like Henry Hill, for example, or even De Niro and Pesci's characters. There are elements within that characterization that glorifies them as people. You still find something to connect with the characters there. Here, he told this line amazingly where his character wasn't a dick, his character wasn't glorified, his character wasn't endearable, if that's a word, but Endearing, sorry. And it still came across. It still came across as hard hitting. I was still invested in Frank's character by the end of the movie.
Man, I so wasn't because it had gone on so long. And I totally disagree that this movie doesn't have pieces that can be cut. It's like the boniest part of the chicken. Like there's barely any meat and just like extra whatever shit you don't need. Because, I mean, his editor, Thelma Schoonmaker, she's been with him like 40, 50 years, right?
Right, right.
He needs a no-man, dude. He's gone like Quentin Tarantino on this movie where it's just like everything I imagine is going to stay.
Oh, he needs
movie.
A no-man because she's a woman. Okay, with her.
Come on, dude. What would you rather do? Watch Goodfellas twice or Irishman once?
What sort of a choice is that?
I'm
firstly,
I'm just saying, like this is the third time I'm watching the movie, as are you at least.
And I there were things that I loved in this viewing that I didn't notice in the first viewing. That's what I love about
rewatching.
Because
it's 3.5 hours. It's impossible for a human to be fully focused.
It's great. I'll watch it again. If I'm definitely going to watch it again in my life. I'm going to watch it multiple times in my life.
Dude, I think the thing is like Scorsese just got this offer from Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he doesn't need to deal with like intervals and exhibitor windows and having 5 shows a day. And all the other reasons most people can't have a 3.5 hour or 4 hour movie. Again, Gangs of Wazapur was released in 2 parts, right? So he just went crazy. He's just like, you know what? No holds barred. Let me just go crazy, do whatever I want. And he made this like long ass unedited turd of a movie.
Wow. Okay. I'm not going to dignify that with a response. The other thing that I want to add on top of this is that whenever I see gangster movies or great gangster movies, you know, from A Godfather to anything that Scorsese's done or anything, one thing that eludes me personally when I watch that movie is this satisfying feeling of closure by the end of it, which you get with this movie.
You don't get closure at the end of Godfather?
No.
He kills his brother and
that's
then
not, but it's
sad.
Not closure because like it's so tense and like pensive and Michael's like Michael.
And better. There is no conflict in the heart of this
movie.
No,
this movie is closure because it's reflective. It's like 60 years encapsulating. There's no happily or unhappily ever after. It's just Frank sitting there choosing his own grave and his coffin and all of that. But there is a sense of closure for all the characters.
The Godfather 2 ends with Michael thinking of a flashback to the last time the family was all together with all his brothers still alive, his sister, his soon-to-be brother-in-law, and just reflects after killing his brother.
Yeah, but then
that
Michael...
Is not
no,
closure to
that
you?
Is, I'll tell you why that isn't closure, because I know Michael's going to go on and live his life, and then I see what turd of a life that is in Godfather Part
so
3.
You need to see the character die for it to be
not
closure.
To die, but to like, there's some sort of closure, right? Or like with other characters as well. Here, Michael's just sitting on a chair reflecting because we know he's going to go fuck shit up for another 20 years.
Well, in Casino, Ace Rothstein becomes the head of like something stupid in the casino. In Goodfellas, he's in witness protection. I mean,
well, Goodfellas is Henry Hill technically. It's not Robert De Niro, and Henry Hill's is a very like, oh, that sucks. But he has his entire fucked up life to live after that.
Yeah, we don't know that at the end of the movie. My point is, you don't need to see a character die for it to be closure.
I'm just telling you, I felt a great sense of closure. What's your fucking problem with it?
I felt a great sense of closure when this movie ended because I'm never gonna watch it again. Can we talk about
the acting, please?
Okay, I was going to talk about the characters, but sure, let's do that through the acting.
Yeah, let's do that. I mean, either way, we have to talk about it. It was so powerful. Firstly, we already got De Niro and Pacino out of the way. I think it was tremendous because we got so much screen time for both of them.
We haven't gotten them out of the way. I have plenty to say on both of them.
Okay.
Before we get to the acting, we have to talk about de-aging, man. The most hyped part of this movie is the fact that they were de-aged. 76-year-old Robert De Niro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it didn't work, bro. They didn't cross the uncanny valley for me. Did they for you?
No. I think de-aging, not in general, but Robert De Niro specifically, is a concession that I have for this movie.
Oh, great.
You know what kept throwing me off were his eyes. Did that happen to you?
What kept throwing me off is that he looked like he was a 22-year-old man who got Botox done. He looked like his own waxwork from Madame Tussauds, walking, talking, acting.
I think where it started to fall apart were...
Not the real Madame Tussauds, by the way. Like the off-brand, like
Singapore version.
Film. Yeah, Singapore version.
What started falling apart for me was, for example, that grocery store scene where who assaulted his daughter and he beats him up.
Yeah.
That's not a 30-year-old man stomping on someone's hand.
Yeah, that's a 76-year-old that is man stomping on someone.
Because he has his elbow stuck down up and stuff, and he's like his entire body's moving to like slam the guy instead of just his legs.
You can tell that he had a tough day for the rest of the day after that scene.
Dude, but
have you seen Bicentennial Man with Robin Williams?
I have, yes.
this is exactly what Robert
that's a little
Niro
too much.
Like.
No, he's not Tin Man, dude. He's still a human being with like normal limbs,
he
but just
basically
like,
is Tin Man.
You know, but I got used to it early enough. It's like you watching Chernobyl and never get used to Russians having British accents. If you get used to it, then you're good. And I got used to it pretty early on.
I never got used
in
to
my
it.
First viewing, in fact, not even the second or the third.
I was keenly aware of myself aging as Frank was aging through the long runtime of this movie.
But you know why I say specifically Robert De Niro's is because I feel like some of the other de-aging worked pretty well. Like Joe Pesci's was really good.
Joe Pesci is slowly dying, and you can tell from his face. We're all slowly dying, Vikram. But Joe Pesci's face is melting a little quicker than the rest of us.
What?
And you could tell. The scene, the very first scene where he meets Joe Pesci, Frank meets Russ.
The truck scene?
The truck carburetor, whatever scene.
Yeah.
What age is Russ supposed to be there?
Russ is supposed to be like 40, 45.
Is he?
Yeah.
He looks like Joe Pesci looks. Like that
age. No, no. Have you seen Joe Pesci?
Oh, I'm guessing he looks like a 90-year-old.
Joe Pesci looks like the prison version of himself. He's closer to that than the truck version.
Dude, the de-aging in Goodfellas and Casino is actually superior to this. I mean, Joe Pesci was too old for his role in Goodfellas. He's actually supposed to be Henry Hill's age, not, I forget the Robert De Niro character's age. So he actually got some guy, a friend of his, to do a bunch of like young person makeup and sent in an audition to Scorsese because Scorsese had been like, you're too old for this movie. That's also de-aging, you know?
That is not de-aging. By de-aging here, we mean computer technology used to de-age a 76-year-old man into a 29-year-old, presumably.
But it didn't work. You can't just say
29. It's not as bad as you're making it out to be. It's just something you have to get used to, and you do it pretty soon enough. And post that, it's beautiful.
No, it's not, man. You know why it's not? Because these are legends. We have Joe Pesci aside, I've only seen him in like particular roles, often Scorsese, and my cousin Vinny.
Home Alone?
And Home Alone, of course. But he was old then, you know. De Niro and Pacino have been legends since their late 20s. We have grown up with young versions of these characters. And it's not like an MCU movie where you see like maybe a Sam Jackson in Captain Marvel, they did a really good job. But like a Kurt Russell, a Michael Douglas, you see like flashing moments. So you're like, oh, cool. They look like how they used to look. Here, I'm looking at a 76-year-old Robert De Niro, de-aged into a 29-year-old Robert De Niro, while being acutely aware of what Robert De Niro looked like in like a 70s movie. It's so bad. Why did he do it?
It's not the same, firstly. I agree with you. The other thing I just want to touch upon really quickly is Michael Douglas de-aged in Endgame is the worst de-aging I've ever seen in my entire life.
Oh, is it?
It's awful. It's god. It's like it comes. It's a close first after Princess Leia.
Okay, Princess Leia is the worst I've ever seen.
Especially in this Rise of Skywalker movie.
No, she was dead in this one. That's different.
It's still. It was pretty bad. But my point is that I liked it because I knew that there wasn't anyone out there who would remotely come close to Robert De Niro playing a 29-year-old Robert De Niro.
They cast Robert De Niro to play a 29-year-old Marlon Brando in Godfather 2.
And it was Robert De Niro. There's no Robert De Niro, 29-year-old version of Robert De Niro.
I'm sorry, you know. Have you ever seen Harry Styles act?
I have. Yes, I have. we both have.
I couldn't think of a
clearly. So you could have just refrained from an example. You don't have
Adam
to share
Driver,
an example.
Bro, Adam Driver can Adam play Driver. Anything. He can play anything.
As much as I like him, he would have sucked. He's like, he has a foot on Robert De Niro, dude. There's no way you can hide 1 foot of height.
Okay, let's talk about the acting, okay?
Please, before
we even talk about the characters, which I think are weak, just the acting itself. I came up with a phrase while preparing for this feud for Robert De Niro. You have to like focus.
A phrase.
It's genius, really.
Oh, look deep. I'm already not interested.
Not acting is not acting. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, it's pretentious. So fucking pretentious.
Robert De Niro is
not
acting.
Acting is not acting. Boom. Explosions.
Mic drop. Podcast mic drop. What are you doing? He's not. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't act.
So he's silent a lot. Yeah.
He's understated to the point of invisible stated.
Okay, I'll tell you how you can gauge whether his acting was good or not. Okay? Frank Sheeran, the character, is quiet, is broody, is reflective, only talks when he's spoken to.
Like Robert De Niro, the man?
No.
Yeah, that's exactly.
There are enough interviews of Robert De Niro having fun, and you see the true Robert De Niro there. I'm not talking about Jimmy Fallon, Robert De Niro.
Frank Sheeran equals Robert De Niro on Jimmy Fallon.
That's not true, because Robert De Niro is visibly and clearly annoyed when he's on Jimmy Fallon.
As would anyone be.
Yeah, so that's not something that you can pin on him. But
he's phoning it in.
There are enough interviews of Robert De Niro currently out there where you see him normally talking. So Frank Sheeran is not Robert De Niro, all right? Frank Sheeran, and the differences you see in Frank Sheeran's mindset as the movie progresses, after he's taken specific steps, you see the difference in characterization come up. He'll start mumbling when he's on the spot. He'll be clear and precise when he's not
that
on the spot.
That phone scene mumbling, by the way, where he's regrets, I guess, for killing his friend, but he's literally
That's when we see Robert De Niro's character's depth.
The only time he acts. That's the one scene he acts. No, ironically, when he's phoning it, that's the only time he's not phoning it in.
No, there's so many small scenes when he's talking to Big Ears, for example. And he's just like, what? I'm not looking at you. Like, all small things. He's done it to perfection. I hope you will come to your senses one day. I'm hoping you do another rewatch.
I can't ever do a rewatch of this movie. Not in the near future. Not in the 2020s, probably.
Okay.
But, I mean, listen, was he understated to the point of genius? I guess we'll let the jury decide.
I think he was.
Al Pacino.
Mm-hmm. Solidarity!
Yeah.
Solidarity!
He just goes full scent of a woman. He's just like, it's my union, Frank. Hoo-ha! He might as well be saying that. He's hamming it up.
He's not hamming it up. Have you seen? I went and saw Hoffa interviews after this.
Yeah.
And pictures and stuff. It's unbelievable what he's done. Okay. It's literally unbelievable what he's done.
But
in terms of character mapping.
Too much Al Pacino. It's still Al Pacino. His whole thing was loud. Robert De Niro was going to be like soft, muted roles throughout his career. Sometimes he would play against type. And Al Pacino was like the Attica and, you're out of order. This whole court's out of order. That was his big thing, yelling. So yeah, he's casted for type to the extent that Jimmy Hoffa was like that. But it's just too nostalgic. We've seen this before. It's like hoo-ha.
That's unbelievable. But I mean, then technically anything that, if Jimmy Hoffa was like that and Al Pacino played him, then Al Pacino didn't do a good job. But if some other actor played him, he did a phenomenal job. What you're saying.
No. What I'm saying
is, he played Jimmy Hoffa perfectly is what I'm saying.
Imagine if the character Joe Pesci was cast for.
Right.
Happened to be a lot like a violent, unpredictable type.
And but he wasn't.
Okay, he wasn't. But yeah. I'm just saying. And then Joe Pesci played him.
Yeah.
You'd be like, yeah, okay, I'm done. I've seen Joe Pesci play this person before.
Okay.
In fact, this happened with Casino when he redid a character similar to his character from Goodfellas. That's how I felt about Al Pacino. I'm like, do something new, bro. It's okay. He could have added some more pizzazz to it that made him different. He just felt like scent of a woman.
But don't you think the actor's true test is to play the character? It's a real character. It's not a fictional character, firstly. It's not from pages of a script. It's a real person who lived.
It is a script. It's not a documentary.
No, but he's playing Jimmy Hoffa. He has to play Jimmy Hoffa to the likeness of Jimmy Hoffa, which he did well enough.
I've seen way too much like side content about all of Scorsese's movies, and anytime they're based on real characters, they don't play them like the real characters.
Yeah,
Ray
but
Liotta
then
was not
no,
like
but then in those movies, they'll also sometimes change the names and stuff. They'll allude to characters. Here, they're doing straight. You're Jimmy Hoffa. You're Frank Sheeran. You're
Ray
Russ.
Liotta was not like Henry Hill. He just took the parts he wanted and didn't. Here.
And I remember you telling me this, Scorsese purposely didn't let Ray Liotta look at Henry Hill footage.
To not be the same, yeah.
Yeah, but here, if you're shooting for something that needs to be the same, especially someone like Jimmy Hoffa, look, we're Indians, we don't know who Jimmy Hoffa was, but everyone in America today or their parents knows who Jimmy Hoffa was.
Or so Scorsese claims. I mean, now everybody will.
Everyone knew Jimmy Hoffa was. Just because they say in the movie that he was big in the 60s, 70s doesn't mean that Scorsese is saying that. He was. And, you know, smaller things like the accent. Like, Pacino playing a fictional character will always have his Pacino's accent. Here, he's doing a different accent, if you notice.
I didn't.
That's really messed up.
It's my union, Frank.
Because that's all you're focusing on. You're like, oh, Al Pacino, scent of a woman? Let me write this down. Let me write this down. What about Joe Pesci, dude? Come on. He played something that he's never played before.
My cousin Pesci. I will grant Joe Pesci in this movie, just because it's so sweet to see him. You know?
Hey, Frank. Hey.
Yeah.
My head's on fire.
That was from Home Alone, sorry.
Okay, calm down. First,
I think he needs an Oscar, dude.
That's all I know.
Hey, Frank! My rat!
That's all I think about when his head's on fire in Home Alone. that's Joe Pesci. But Oscar, dude, what thoughts? Oscar for this?
I mean, unless you mean a nice little Labrador named Oscar.
Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor in a Motion Picture.
I will throw up if that happens.
You will throw up?
Yeah.
Come on, dude. Seriously?
It's okay. It's okay. He barely needed to act. It's okay.
You just harped on for 10 minutes before this about how an actor plays typecast role.
He plays against type. I'm so happy.
He completely plays against type. He's convincing. And I think the de-aging worked well on him. Plus that last, especially when he's in the prison and just before that, the run up to
Just the two scenes where he's sitting and dipping the bread in wine and he's saying, nah, just a little piece.
And then when they're playing that game and even before that, you know, like the ending of the road trip, the journey, him sitting across, I think the best scene, my favorite scene in the movie is him sitting across Frank Sheeran at the breakfast table and telling him that he's going to go fly out and go kill Hoffa. I think that's the best scene in the movie. And that's purely because of Pesci's acting. I think he did a phenomenal job in this movie. I was really moved.
To the extent I have a concession on the acting, it is that. And, you know, this movie also got a lot of hate. Firstly, no women in the movie, you know, because Casino at least had Sharon Stone. And Lorraine Brocco in Goodfellas, often the most underrated component. And not by Scorsese, because she's the only other character who has a voiceover in the movie. So she's, like, obviously important. And as, like, the cap to that Goodfellas Casino trilogy, which, face it or not, this is. I know there's, like, a 25-year-old gap. This movie was really missing that one component. It's too much like Frank and his voiceover, something that I liked in the other movies. Anna Paquin's character, what do you think about that? As the moral center of the movie.
I liked it. I liked it because I think her, well, she didn't have many lines, but I think her presence in the story and at the points where it came and how it reflected on Frank Sheeran's character growth was paramount.
Oh, yeah. I knew you'd say something positive. I think there was a lot of potential, but totally wasted because they chose to make her this like silent judging from the distance kind of thing. Waste of Anna Paquin.
Waste of Anna Paquin? I don't even think she's that great.
She won an Oscar when she was like 12, bro.
So?
They reduced
Jennifer Lopez is up for an Oscar in 2020 most likely.
They reduced Anna Paquin to Anna Mannequin. I tried my best.
That's what you were shooting for this entire time.
No, I wasn't. I think that character could have been really, really enhanced, and then they could have just ended the movie when she like breaks up with him instead of the last 40 minutes. But we've been over that.
What? First, last 40 minutes is the best part of the movie. Secondly, I don't think she should have had more dialogue. I think it was perfect because it's just she's acting like the audience in a way, or the audience that's disapproving of Frank. She's that. She's a reflection of that. So her importance in Frank's life brings out a lot in Robert De Niro's character, especially in the later part of his life.
Only in the end, yeah.
And then even throughout, like the stare she gives.
The other daughter gets a scene.
Yeah.
To actually condemn him for his actions and show the disconnect.
Which was perfect because Anna Paquin doesn't want to talk to him, so the other daughter will.
So if Anna Paquin had been that daughter...
That would have been weak.
No, gave him a shot and then just said no and still cut him out. Made an active decision to not let him have the thing that Star Wars movies let people get away with too easily, redemption. No such thing as redemption in your world. Screw off.
There was no redemption. He didn't get redemption. And I think that would have been a waste of Anna Paquin.
But one of his daughters spoke to him.
Yeah.
He has one daughter talking to him. What's his problem then?
What?
Doesn't it?
No.
Isn't one enough?
Moving on.
I want to close out the acting stuff because this movie has a lot of actors.
Great actors.
And I want to mention them.
Fantastic.
In a bad way.
Mm.
Because when you have a cameo from a very familiar face in a movie, that's not good. That's awful. I don't buy into the character. The whole time I'm like, oh, hey, Ray Romano. I wonder how like
Ray Romano's not a cameo.
Yeah, he has like...
Harvey Keitel's more of a cameo than
Ray. You know, Scorsese calls Robert De Niro's role in Goodfellas an extended cameo, by the way. So okay. Ray Romano's definitely less than that.
I really liked Ray Romano. I didn't know he could act, honestly.
Harvey Keitel. I'm like, yeah, dude. Oh, cool. Check out Harvey Keitel.
Yeah.
Like, I don't buy into his character. I don't get to like reinforce who he's about, what his name is.
Yeah, you don't need to. He was just Russ's boss when he showed up. That's it.
It's just swan song. Oh, look, it's Bobby Cannavale. And look, Sebastian Maniscalco.
You got it.
And oh, look, freaking Joey Buttafuoco.
Okay, what about Stephen Graham?
Antonio Margheriti.
What about Stephen Graham?
Katie Cuoco. And look, it's like Bombozo Sidioni.
I hope no one in Italy is listening to this. What about Stephen Graham?
Don Rickles used to do this bit where every time he interacted with Frank Sinatra, he used to play on
Hey, how's Alberto? I've seen that stuff.
Yeah. And he used to play on the fact that he's Italian and the mafia connection.
Yeah, yeah.
So he'd be like, Antonio Margarucci told me he owes you some money and he said your kids will be okay.
I've seen that stuff. Yeah, what about Stephen Graham?
Who's Stephen Graham?
Tony Pro, the little guy.
Oh, Tony Pro.
He's UK AF and he pulled off being a gangster like a G, dude.
He looked like he was struggling with his accent a little bit.
I think he was struggling with it. My ass, dude. Do you remember him from Snatch?
Oh, he's Jason Statham.
He's Jason Statham's mood. He's like full-blooded, like British. And I think he did a tremendous job, dude.
Okay, calm down. John Boyega is British. You can't tell in the Star Wars movies.
Who's Relax. John Boyega?
It's Finn. Come on, man. Where's your pop culture knowledge?
Ew, that dude looks like he's just generally struggling. British or not British.
Okay, like Hugh Jackman's Australian.
You don't think Tony Pro did well?
He did okay. It's okay. He had like a real role. I didn't realize he was the guy from Snatch.
Mm-hmm.
But I like him. He's a good character actor. I wouldn't expect anything better. Like he had the hammiest of roles, firstly, right?
Yeah, and that's tougher to do if you're not native, right? Think about it.
He can do good accent. All right,
he's a great actor. We're talking about actors. I just wanted to point out, Jesus, don't take it personally.
I personally like the performance of Cariato Margaroto.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think we should stop this.
Bonaccini.
We need to stop this. Definitely need to stop this now.
There were too many cameos.
Yeah, okay.
My point.
Yeah, noted. All I want to say is that this is the best movie from last year. I don't know what you think or why you think you're thinking. It's entertaining, yet it's not commercial fluff.
Mm-hmm.
It's riveting. Amazing performances. And the closure bit, dude. I just like to show 60 years in the way he showed it. Fine, the de-aging work didn't work sometimes, but to encapsulate that longer period of time with Jimmy Hoffa, who's not even the central character in this movie, but the point of view of someone who actually ended up killing him was his best friend. I don't know how it gets better. I don't know what you're talking about, Swan Song and all of this. This is Scorsese at his best, not doing what he usually does. It's not quick, snap, snap, cut scene and all of that. It's slow, it's reflective, and it's so moving.
Are you done?
Yes.
Was that your summary? It must have been, because it was long and tedious, like the movie. Now let me give you my summary.
Okay.
With the brevity that this movie should have aspired for.
Okay.
It came out on Netflix, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is The Bright,
huh?
Starring Will Smith.
Oh.
Of mobster movies.
Oh, never mind.
And The Bird Box of horror movies.
And that wraps up this week's episode of Film Feud. Hope you guys enjoyed.
Thank you for listening. Now we feuded, and you, our listeners, get to decide who you think won the feud. You can reach out to us on our Instagram or on our Facebook at Muncha Movies and let us know who you think won, or you can find us on YouTube and let us know in the comment section.
If you guys love podcasts, then you can get us wherever you guys hear your podcasts: Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Castbox, and more, or our website, munchamovies.com.
Until next week.
Bye-bye.